Blog Talk Radio.
Do your dance.
Robin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to
sing along.
Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring with the harmony. Oh, let us rejoice and rise high. Turn it to South as the door sea.
Let the peace set from the place. Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
It's considered one of the most important pieces of civil rights legislation ever passed. But by 5-4, the U.S. Supreme Court today took the teeth out of a law enacted nearly 50 years
ago. Hold on. Somebody just told me that I wasn't on. My mic was not on. So now I'm checking to see if it's on now. I apologize for that little 5 minutes of dead air. We're going to be dealing with the Voters' Rights Act of 1965. I feel that it didn't get not a lot of coverage. I'm repeating myself. If you heard me, you heard me. If not, I'm repeating myself, Ebony. I feel that it did not get a lot of coverage during the George Zimmerman trial. So Section 5 got eradicated. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? We're going to be chopping it up with my homeboy Kelly Robb from Akron and Charles Love from Chicago. And anyone else who would like to chime in, the number is 347-838-9825. we're going to be taking a look at a lot of things that transpired this weekend, especially the George Zimmerman trial also. So, but first we're going to deal with the Voting Rights Act of 1965, Section 5. Some of you all know my opinion on it, and some of you might not know my opinion on it, but I'm going to hold my opinion until the end of the segments. Again, 347-838-9825. Okay, Ebony. Matter of fact, we're going to be up in a break when it goes off, so go to the commercial after, right after that. We're going to be up against the break. My fault for the dead, everybody, but this went on. They played on June 24th. Yeah.
It's considered one of the most important pieces of civil rights legislation ever passed. But by 5-4, the U.S. Supreme Court today took the teeth out of a law enacted nearly.
And we return to our coverage of today's Supreme Court ruling on the Voting Rights Act. Ray Suarez examines how the law has shaped voting across the country.
And we turn to Edward Blum of the Project on Fair Representation. He helped Shelby County bring its challenge to the Voting Rights Act. And Sherilyn Eiffel is president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. You saw both of them earlier outside the courtroom in Quam.
It's considered one of the most important pieces of civil rights legislation ever passed. But by 5-4, the U.S. Supreme Court today took the teeth out of a law enacted nearly 50 years ago. NewsHour correspondent Kwame Holman begins our coverage.
President Lyndon Johnson signed the landmark law in 1965, and ever since, the Voting Rights Act has policed voting discrimination. But today's decision effectively puts it on hold. Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the 5-member majority, said the law originally distinguished between states that had used barriers to minority voting and had low voter turnout and those that had not. But he wrote, "Today the nation is no longer divided along those lines, yet the Voting Rights Act continues to treat it as if it were." Edward Blum, speaking for officials in Shelby County, Alabama, who made the challenge to the Voting Act, welcomed the outcome.
This decision restores an important constitutional order to our system of government, and that requires that all 50 states and every jurisdiction have the laws applied equally to them.
The decision leaves the heart of the law, Section 5, on the books. It requires states, mainly in the Deep South, to get federal approval before changing voting procedures or districts. But the court majority said it cannot be enforced until Congress comes up with new rules for getting that approval, thus moving the responsibility across the street to the Capitol. Sherilyn Eiffel, president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, said that's now where her organization will focus.
We believe that Congress is in a better position than the Supreme Court to determine how voting discrimination plays out in this country. We're disappointed, but now the ball is in Congress's court.
In a statement, President Obama said he was deeply disappointed with the court's decision and urged Congress to restore federal oversight. In the meantime, Attorney General Eric Holder insisted the Justice Department will continue to monitor changes in state and local voting laws.
Let me be very clear. We will not hesitate to take swift enforcement action using every legal tool that remains to us against any jurisdiction that seeks to take advantage of the Supreme Court's ruling by hindering eligible citizens' full and free exercise of the franchise.
Still, today's decision apparently clears the way for several high-profile laws to take effect, including stricter voter ID requirements in Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas that drew objections from civil rights groups.
And back with us tonight, of course, is Marcia Coyle of the National Law Journal. So tonight, Marcia, Justice Roberts speaking for the court, saying, in essence, the world has changed, but the law has not.
He has, Jeff. And here's how he explained his ruling. He read a summary of it from the bench this morning. He began by saying how the Voting Rights Act is a dramatic departure from certain fundamental principles in the Constitution and in our government. For example, states are given broad powers under the Constitution to regulate elections. Fundamental to the structure of government is a belief, a commitment to the equal sovereignty of the states. So the Voting Rights Act, he said, when it imposes current burdens as it does has to be justified by current conditions, and the coverage formula does not do that.
And just remind us of that formula. It's the so-called preclearance, right, where they have to apply to say what they're going to do.
There are two sections of the Voting Rights Act that operate in tandem. The coverage formula determines which states or jurisdictions have to conform to Section 5, mm-hmm. which is the pre-approval. Any covered jurisdiction has to get approval of any voting changes from the Justice Department or the federal court in Washington, D.C. It was the coverage formula, not the pre-approval process, that the court struck down today.
So the question for the court, and you said what Justice Roberts is looking at, whether racial minorities continue to face voting discrimination. What evidence was he citing?
He agreed that there is still discrimination today, but the rub here is the coverage formula. He said when Congress designed the formula, it was meant to capture voting tests like literacy tests and also states in which there was low minority voting registration and turnout. Well, he said voting tests have been eradicated, and registration and turnout of minorities in some of the covered states is actually much higher than even in states that are not covered. So the formula, he said, was not meeting current conditions. It was based on data and practices from the 1960s and 1970s. He also discounted the government's argument that Congress had created this enormous record, 15,000 pages in 2006, to justify the reauthorization incidents of current and past discriminatory practices. And he said that Congress didn't use that record to shape a formula that responded to those current conditions.
Now, the dissent was from Justice Ginsburg, and she referred to what she called second generation barriers to voting.
Yes. She had 2 points. On that, she said the court really didn't, the majority didn't really engage Congress's record here. She said Congress had overwhelming evidence of current, recent discrimination in voting that was egregious by the covered states. It wasn't, she said, the voting practices, the tests and the registration and turnout. It was second generation discrimination that is more subtle, that can involve moving a polling place to a location where minorities have no transportation, mm-hmm. or even racial gerrymandering of redistricting. So she felt that the majority really didn't address what Congress did here. But her second point was, she said fundamentally this case comes down to who should decide, a court or a Congress, which is explicitly empowered by the 14th and 15th Amendment to enforce the anti-discrimination mandates in those amendments. And she said where Congress has produced 15,000 pages of legislative findings, the court should defer to Congress.
Now, this is a decision that has almost immediate practical effect, right?
It does, judging by what some of the comments have been by some governors. Mm-hmm. The governor of Texas said that the photo ID law for voter registration will go into effect immediately. It's considered the most stringent in the country. Also, some of the redistricting plans that have been pending. There is no reason now, it would seem, unless the states and jurisdictions that have been covered by Section 4 want to see what the Justice Department thinks, to actually ask the Justice Department or a federal court whether they're violating the voting rights law.
But short of that, the court is saying it's back in your hands, Congress.
It's up to Congress, mm-hmm. the Chief Justice said, to craft a formula that responds to current conditions.
All right. Now, I want to ask you about another decision today. This was the so-called Baby Veronica case. And it's involved adoption and the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Right. This was a custody dispute. A single mother had a child of Indian heritage, Cherokee, a member of the Cherokee tribe. Mm-hmm. And the biological father was not involved in supporting the pregnancy. Even though he wanted to marry her, she declined. When she decided to put the child up for adoption, He asserted his paternity. The dispute went into court. South Carolina courts found that the Indian Child Welfare Act, which is designed to protect the integrity of Indian families.
Yeah, it's based on a lot of past bad history
yeah. of Indian yeah. children being removed, yeah. applied and mm-hmm. awarded custody to the father after finding he would be a fit father. Mm-hmm. The court today, in another divided opinion, this one by Justice Alito, really parsed two provisions of the Indian Child Welfare Act, words to the effect of continued custody of the child, and a provision designed to prevent the breakup of Indian families, mm-hmm. and said that the act doesn't apply here. The father never had continued custody, and there was no Indian family being broken up. So the case was sent back to the South Carolina courts to determine who, under South Carolina law probably, who should get the child.
Right, so the practical impact is it goes back to this lower court, but it's not clear what will happen to the child at this point.
It's not, because the Cherokee tribe, as well as the father, could again try to assert their rights under that law.
And as you said, this was another 5-4 decision, right?
Yes, it was. The court split ideologically, as well as in the Voting Rights Act.
Although yeah, a big day a different ideology?
It was slightly different. Justice Breyer joined the majority in uh-huh. the Indian Child Welfare Act. Justice Scalia joined the dissenters. He said the father is the biological parent, wants custody, he's fit, he should have it.
All right, and now we know that we are going to see you tomorrow, right?
Yes, tomorrow is the last day of the current term, mm-hmm. and we're expecting to see how the court wraps up the two same-sex marriage laws, and then there's another case.
I couldn't shake your memory, and I never knew the sweetest love was the first. So what am I supposed to do about this curse? Oh, baby, I've got you to blame. And I'm calling, calling out your name. Oh, he was so fine. Jimmy. Oh, he was so fine. Jimmy.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Earl.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I love you more each day. But the word got in my way.
Can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit man, bop the bop, bop it out of bebop, bop the bop, yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit man, sound good, yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it. something to shake things up. I like Johnny Mathis, but I can't do that stuff. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got S-O-U-L, soul. I can't do rock, I can't do roll. What I can do, baby, is show my soul. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got, Jimmy got, Jimmy got soul.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry for the over and over play of that first clip. Had a little loop in it. Computer error. Let me go ahead and get back with the next part on that PBS special and the Voting Rights Act strike down of Section 5.
And we return to our coverage of today's Supreme Court ruling on the Voting Rights Act, where Suarez examines how the law has shaped voting across the country.
And we turn to Edward Blum of the Project on Fair Representation. He helped Shelby County bring its challenge to the Voting Rights Act. And Sherilyn Eiffel is president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. You saw both of them earlier outside the courtroom in Kwame Holman's report. And full disclosure, Sherilyn Eiffel is Gwen Eiffel's cousin. Let's start with the basics. Did the Voting Rights Act, Edward Blum, do what it was passed to do in 1965?
Thank goodness it did. It ended the widespread and insidious acts of racial disenfranchisement throughout the Deep South and elsewhere. And it's a great testament to the evolution of our nation that the court today felt that the Voting Rights Act had done its thing, and it was no longer necessary. I think that's a good thing for the country, and I think it speaks well to the character of the American people, both in the North and the South.
Sherilyn Eiffel, same question.
Well, of course, the Voting Rights Act has been called the crown jewel of civil rights litigation because it has been so effective. But has it completed its work? By no means. And that's why in 2006, when Congress was looking at whether to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act, they went through almost a year of hearings and heard testimony and looked at racial discrimination in voting in this country. They amassed a 15,000-page record that demonstrated the ongoing problem of racial discrimination in voting in jurisdictions throughout this country. And of course, the 15th Amendment to the Constitution says that Congress has the power to enforce the ban on voting discrimination that's set out in the 15th Amendment, not the Supreme Court. And so it really hardly matters whether the Supreme Court feels that things are good enough to get rid of the Voting Rights Act. What matters is, what did Congress determine, and did they do their job responsibly?
But Section 4, which mm-hmm. was specifically struck down today, mm-hmm. didn't apply to the nation as a whole. Mm-hmm. It applied to certain sections of the country that yep. were singled out for extra scrutiny from Congress. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine a time where those places would come out from under that? Because today, the Supreme Court could.
Sure, sure. I can imagine a time, and I don't even have to imagine it, because the law also includes a provision called bailout that allows jurisdictions that have not run afoul of the Voting Rights Act over a 10-year period to be removed from the requirements of the law. And every jurisdiction that has sought bailout since the enactment of the statute has been granted bailout. All Shelby County, Alabama had to do, and all the state of Alabama has to do, is not discriminate against racial minorities in voting for 10 years to get out from under the provisions of the Voting Rights Act. So there's a door out, but the door out is premised on a jurisdiction that ensures that its voting processes are equal, open, and fair.
Edward Blum, are all the places that are now not under the scrutiny of preclearance, do they belong there? Have they, as Sherilyn Eiffel suggests, earned their way out?
Well, I think many of them have earned their way out, and I feel that it was Congress's responsibility back in 2006 not just to examine those jurisdictions that were put into this coverage back in 1965, but also to look outside of these jurisdictions in places like Ohio and Indiana and Illinois and Michigan. Congress failed to do that. Congress assumed that because these were bad actors back in 1965, that they are continuing to be bad actors. If Congress had cast a wider net, looked carefully at those states that were covered, made a determination, some perhaps should stay in, some perhaps should come out, but also looked at the rest of the country, then I don't think we would have this decision today. Congress failed to do that, even though in 2009 the Supreme Court warned them that something like this could happen if another...
So you could have countenanced a Section 4 that was spread even more widely over the United States?
I could have countenanced a Section 4 that swept in bad actors, but swept out good actors. And if that meant that parts of Alabama were to be swept out, yet parts of Illinois and Massachusetts would be swept in, I can live with that. And I think most of the supporters of the Voting Rights Act could. Congress failed to do that. That's why we're here where we are.
If Mr. Blum could live with that, then he wouldn't have been behind the effort to challenge the Voting Rights Act, because, in fact, I just described a bailout provision in the Voting Rights Act. The Voting Rights Act has a bail-in provision. It allows jurisdictions that are not covered by Section 5 of the Act, who have engaged in discrimination and who have been found by a judge to engage in discrimination, to be bailed in. Arkansas was bailed in for a time. New Mexico was bailed in for a time. So any jurisdiction, including the jurisdictions that you've identified, who've engaged in voting practices that have been found by a judge to discriminate in voting, can, under the strictures of Section 5, be bailed into the Voting Rights Act. The genius of the statute is that it has a door that goes both ways. The problem is that jurisdictions, many jurisdictions, have not simply done the job that they need to do in order to be permitted to get out.
But as you heard Mr. Blum point out, Congress was also not using the mechanics that's right there in the law to separate the good and bad actors.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what that means. The mechanics that are in the law are the provisions that allow jurisdictions working with the Justice Department and federal judges to allow jurisdictions to either exit or to compel jurisdictions to enter the provisions of the Act. Congress made a statute that it thought was going to survive precisely because it had this ability to move states in and out. What Congress did in 2006 was it looked at the current states that were under the provisions of Section 5, and it looked at voting discrimination in those states to determine whether they should still be covered. And what it found, to its surprise, I should say, was that there was an overwhelming evidence of voting discrimination continuing in those covered jurisdictions. And as a result, Congress reauthorized the formula to cover those jurisdictions and maintain the bailout and bail-in provisions that allow some states to come in or jurisdictions to come in and some jurisdictions to go out.
Well, now the action moves to Congress, Mr. Blum. Can they design a successor to the struck-down part of the law that will do the things you want and also provide the protections Ms. Eifel wants?
Well, I was on another panel earlier today with Congressman Bobby Scott of Virginia, and he was quite clear about this. He thinks that there is momentum in Congress across the aisle to do a do-over, if you will. Congress can systematically look at voting conditions for minorities from coast to coast, from Maine to California, Florida to Washington, and do a thorough analysis of what is happening today. If they can identify repeat offenders who are intentionally disenfranchising or diluting the votes of minorities, then those jurisdictions can be targeted by Congress, and Section 5 will have an opportunity to prevent them from doing that in the future.
Well, now that it's moved across the street from the Supreme Court to Capitol Hill, what do you think the chances are?
We feel pretty confident. You know, the Voting Rights Act has been reauthorized several times, and always with a bipartisan Congress, signed the reauthorization in 1982 by President Ronald Reagan, the reauthorization signed by President George W. Bush in 2006. It's never been a Democratic statute or a Republican statute. It's always been bipartisan. It's always been about democracy. I think the real question on the table is really, are people like Mr. Blum, and is a majority of the United States Supreme Court, willing to allow Congress to do the job that the framers of the Civil War Amendment said Congress should do, which is that Congress should have the power to make the judgment about how best to do it? Sure, they can come up with another formula, but are we willing to credit the United States Congress with the authority that it has under the 15th Amendment to do precisely that?
Sherrilyn Eifel and Edward Blum, thank you both.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Online, you can listen.
Looking ahead to the practical effect of the High Court's voting rights ruling in coming election cycles in a changing America, I'm joined by Nina Perales, Vice President of Litigation for MALDEF, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and James Burling, Director of Litigation for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Ms. Perales, minus Section 4, will what remains of the Voting Rights Act be enough to protect the voting rights and interests of minority voters?
Well, we're going to have to work with what we have. But the decision invalidating Section 4 has removed protections from millions of African American, Latino, and other voters. And certainly it is incumbent on Congress to try to restore those protections as quickly as possible.
James Burling, how do you see it?
I see it very differently. I think this is a tremendous step in the right direction. I think that we are going to continue, and we must continue, to have protections for minority voters in this country. But we can do it in a much more nuanced way. We can do it in a way that reflects the fact that we are right now in 2013, no longer in 1965. Times have changed tremendously, and the law must change with the times.
Well, Mr. Burling, there are lots of moving parts involved in running elections, remaps following census, each state and jurisdiction's laws about how you sign up to vote and where you vote. With the authority to create these jurisdictions, these preclearance jurisdictions, for now taken away, how do individual voters and groups of voters around the country protect their rights if they feel that they've been violated?
The same way they protect them in all the other states that are not subject to preclearance. You can file a lawsuit. And more importantly, the political dynamics, I think, make it very difficult and rare for the sort of discrimination that occurred in the 1960s to happen again. You have states like Mississippi that has a higher percentage of African Americans registered to vote than white Americans. And I think the idea that we need to have preclearance only for the southern states, or just at any state, actually, is just outdated. And I really think this does give us a good opportunity through Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which allows people to bring lawsuits if there are discrimination problems, and through other civil rights statutes as well. I think that we can move forward, and this is a way of moving forward.
Ms. Perales, Mr. Burling brings up a good point. When the Voting Rights Act was passed in the mid-60s, we were just coming out of the struggles of the civil rights era. Now, almost 50 years later, Asian Americans and Latino Americans are the fastest growing voter groups in the country. What's different about assuring their rights from the days when the United States was trying to get out from under Jim Crow?
Well, luckily, the Voting Rights Act has been vibrant and evolving. Congress reauthorized the Voting Rights Act in 2006 after looking at exactly that. What is the state of voting and discrimination against minority voters in 2006, and amassed a tremendous record in support of the reauthorization. Latinos, of course, have been in the United States since before even it was those parts of the United States where you find many Latinos today, California, Arizona, Colorado, Texas, New Mexico. And Latinos have struggled, as many other minority voters have, to cast an effective ballot. So, for example, the practical implications of the court's ruling on Section 4 is that Texas does not have to preclear, for example, its redistricting plans, which are currently in litigation. And Texas, in every round of redistricting since the 60s, has been found to have discriminated against Latinos in its drawing of boundaries.
So, Mr. Burling, the who has changed, but maybe not the what?
Well, you still do have Section 2, which allows people to bring lawsuits if there is discrimination. And yes, things are more complicated today than they were in the 1960s because we have a variety of other immigrant groups that did not play the political role that they do today back then. But I think despite the fact that the composition of minority groups is changing, this country's commitment to civil rights, this country's commitment to voting rights is undiminished, and this decision does not diminish that at all. It just, as I said before, brings it into the future.
Well, outside of the states of the Confederacy and a scattering of other counties across the country, minority groups are growing apace, and Mr. Burling suggests they have the same remedies under Section 2 that all Americans have always had without that preclearance requirement in place.
That is true. We still have portions of the Voting Rights Act remaining, but Section 2 cases are very different than the protections that we have under Section 5. For example, we've litigated Section 2 cases to the U.S. Supreme Court. It takes years. It takes many, many dollars. And during that time, minority voters have to suffer under what it will eventually be proven as a discriminatory system, right? So hundreds of thousands of Latinos were casting ballots under a discriminatory redistricting system before it was struck down by the Supreme Court in 2006, and that was the last round. In this round, we had the ability to have Section 5 prevent those changes before they went into effect, And later, a court found that they were intentionally racially discriminatory, and that was a decision in 2012. And because of Section 5 and its shifting of the burden onto the jurisdiction to prove non-discrimination, Latino voters were not subjected to discriminatory voting schemes in the interim.
Let me start with you, just check with you both before we go. One of the least talked about parts of Section 4 was one that required foreign language voting materials in many places in the country. Now that Section 4 has been struck down by the High Court, James Burling, is providing foreign language voting materials to Spanish speakers in Texas, to Vietnamese speakers in Louisiana, now an option in a way that it wasn't when Section 4 still stood?
I think that those jurisdictions will still continue to provide voting language materials and voting materials in foreign languages because it's the right thing to do. With Section 4 gone, I don't think it's going to take very long for Congress to amend the act in a way that makes sense. And if you can show that the denial of alternative language voting materials is a violation of somebody's right to vote, then there are effective remedies. Yes, it was just pointed out that utilizing Section 2 in individual lawsuits can be a long and difficult way of doing things, but sometimes the right way of doing things, sometimes the constitutional way of doing things is not the easiest. But that is our system of government. The preclearance provisions put an undue burden on a select number of states based on analyses that were from the 1960s. And now it is time to move forward and to make sure that there is no discrimination in voting, and that could include foreign language voting materials.
Quick reply before we go.
Well, the Voting Rights Act has not been hanging around since the 1960s. It has been a vital tool. What has been unconstitutional are the acts of discrimination, and Section 5 has served that important role to block it until now. Congress is going to have to step in and restore those protections.
Nina Perales, James Burling, thank you both.
Okay, I got a couple of more, but I know I got I'm up against the break, and I want my callers to get a chance to chime in. Now, basically, I picked a couple of clips that can demise the whole situation. You have Gwen Ifill, the confident that the Congress take that issue up and pass that law. Well, make it law. Now, on the other hand, I think her name is Ms. Morales. I hope I said her name correctly. I got to run it back. She's worried that Hispanics, Latinas, are going to get discriminated against. Now, is this new Voting Rights Act debate or scare tactic that people like Al Sharpton is dumping and drumming up like the King Dream has just been made a nightmare? Or did King dream about the rainbow like Jesse Jackson is pushing the rainbow? There's no brown and black in a rainbow for the record, Jesse, but anyway. The point I'm trying to get at is saying this, that is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? You see how many presidents that they mentioned reauthorized it, Reagan, Bush. But why do these presidents have to? It seems like if you were in office for two times, the chance of reauthorizing the Voting Rights Act was great. And it's not no Democrat or Republican deal, because when the Voting Rights Act came up in the Senate and the Congress, it was passed 392-15, and that was Republican votes back then. So that's all I'm saying. It's like when they be coming at you with these bogus facts, you know. Sometimes you need to go back in history and see what was happening during that time period. You know, many people don't realize that the Republicans passed the Voting Rights Act for African Americans. Now, it's in the hands of the Republicans again. I'm quite sure they're going to amend it. But will the Black Caucus ensure that the rights, the Civil Rights Act that were intended for African Americans, still be held for African Americans? Because if it's not for African Americans, then I agree, it should be gone. You know, I can't go for that. No can do. I can't go for that. No can.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Risen, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Risen offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Risen. Visit us online at phoenixrisen.com.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Are you the parent of a troubled teen, or you just want to have a closer relationship with your child? If so, sign up for our free webinar called 5 Easy Tips to Effective Communication with Your Teen right now, hosted by teen expert Release Henry. Log on to successfulteenparenting.com/webinar.
Walking down the street now is a dangerous thing. There are drug dealers, crack houses, gang members, and crackheads. People fighting, cursing, and killing too. So much chaos, we don't know what to do. But if people only knew that they are hurting little children, if they could only see what our community could be. When in consultation, 1, stay calm. 2, try to say something positive. 3, tell the person what's on your mind. 4, ask if the person understands. 5, thank the person for listening if you can. Come on, y'all. Let's be an example. It has to start somewhere. How about now? For more information on ways to prevent violent crimes, contact Totally Positive Productions at 773-488-9553.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello, this is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why?
Does your insurance company work for you?
Hi, this is Ken Robinson, President and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owners policies, general contractors liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crank it up for 2012 with quality radio production. Are you a record label needing hot album promos or EPKs for your new artist? Introducing CoolVoiceRadio.com. Does your internet show need a new intro or outro? How about a promo for your upcoming event? Are you a DJ needing a hot voice for your next hot mixtape? Imagine increased sales in your business from an internet radio spot. We've got you covered with broadcast quality radio spot production with the nation's top voiceover talent, featuring talent like John Heath, Kate Clifford, Bill Thomas, and much, much more. Visit us online at www.coolvoiceradio.com. CoolVoiceRadio.com or call 646-326-7800. Remember, nothing beats the right sound.
783-9825. And my man Kelly Rob might have to take his name off the marquee, then check in today. And so I was going to really dwell on the Voting Rights Act. We've played a couple of clips earlier, and we're going to see if you want to chime in. Again, it's Open Mic Monday. It's whatever you want to talk about. Who we got on right here in these? I'll just take it blind. Hey, what's up? Is this Brother Love?
Yeah, this is Charles.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, how you doing, Charles? What's happening? How you feel, my friend? I'm glad you checked in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, not a problem, not a problem. Twice a week ain't that good. I mean, two times a month. Can't complain about that. Because we got a lot of good, positive response. I was wanting to bring you on next week when I had a lot of other people around the globe debating issues and stuff like that. Because you could be a great conversion man, converter, boy, because your way makes sense. But anyway, I'm dealing with this Voting Rights Act that's going on, that just Section 4 that got kicked back down in the Supreme Court just the other day. And I don't know if you were listening earlier. I was playing some clips from PBS and did a little history from early June to last week of their coverage of it. And just the reason why I'm really having this show, because Friday's show, yeah, the face of the voting rights discrimination changed. It was become the Hispanics, and it's not the blacks. And then it dawned on me, I won't check my mouth this, Charles, you know. I'm a hardcore pro-black cat. I don't know if you might be hardcore in academics. You might just tone me out on this. Now, then it dawned on me, like, is it that they're using the Hispanics to do away with all the gains that the Civil Rights Act has gotten? You know what I'm saying? Because the acts were naturally intended for disadvantaged citizens. That was only the African-American descendants of slaves at that time. But now a lot of other nationalities are getting on the bandwagon for that. Now, do you think this might be a way, I guess, to eradicate all those gains, or is just that people just pile on? What do you think?
Oh, wow, that's an interesting point. I haven't thought about it that deeply, but I think that it's 2 points. I mean, it's possible that it can be used for that, but if you were to ask me, do I think that that's like their plan? Is there some kind of, you know, someone out there who thought of a plan, who thought it would be a good idea and a good way to mitigate some of our gains? I would say that person's giving the government too much credit.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but I would say if you look at the argument, because like I can easily take the argument. Let me give you an example like this: like, man, get rid of it. It's for black folks. Why everybody else getting on it, man? If blacks ain't benefit for it, get rid of it. That could be a strong argument. Let's say then my argument is heard. It held up and heard. You know, and then is that me turning my backs on the fruits of the labor that other people have worked hard on? Or should it be changed because, you know, now the new taxes?
Right, that's what I was going to say. It would depend on, are you getting rid of it and replacing it with something? Are you changing it? Or what are you doing with it? But I think that most things have to be looked at from a broader standpoint. So I say, and the problem with I mean, there were great strides and with the Civil Rights Act, and it was definitely needed at the time. But because we look at things from, and this is a word that hurts people when I say it, but it is. I mean, it's not even a negative because we all do it. We look at things from a selfish standpoint, right? So if I'm gaining something from something, I like it. When I stop gaining something from it, I want to know why. If somebody else comes up and they're not getting anything from it, they're going to say, hey, why are they getting something? And so we all look at it that way. So we have to look at things sometimes from even more of a selfish standpoint than a racist. So somebody may not be, I don't have any problem with black people. I'm not a racist. However, if they're getting something that I don't get and I want it, I got a problem with it, right? So are they really racist? So I say that because the thing with the Civil Rights Act, obviously, there were a lot of pluses to it. So we get a lot of immigrants who come over. I can't remember the name of the book, but there's a woman who is Indian who who wrote a book about how Indians came in and just started to make billions of dollars from taking advantage of things that are in the Civil Rights Act. So some, like you, the pro-black guy, will say, hey, that wasn't for you, that's for us. But if you just step back and take a broader view, that's where I come in from, why I don't like giving the government too much power, because even good intentions have bad consequences. So they did it with this in mind. But like you say, they didn't write black into it. They just said, because the point was to make everyone equal, and blacks aren't being treated equal. So I'm forcing you to treat everyone equal. It didn't say blacks, right? So now when other people come in and they're able to do this, you can't really stop them. Even if people were noticing it, you know, some politicians, wow, I see a group of, you know, illegal aliens getting away with this, or some Chinese immigrants or Indian immigrants. But there was no way to immigrant. Stop them. Right.
Indian immigrants are different from the word illegal. What I'm saying
is that's true. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. But because if something is illegal, then it's not right. You know, so that whole point right there, and that's why I got mad at Bobby Rush by saying illegal aliens, like calling them the N-word, even though they're in this country illegally.
Illegal.
And they
right.
did not necessarily have to be Hispanics. They could be Kenyans. Overstand a visa. They could be...
Right, you overstay your visa, you're here illegally. It's not... See, everybody thinks it's run across the border. You know, I snuck in the middle of the night. But yeah, I come in to go to school, I got a six-month visa, you lose me. It's been
right.
4 years. You're illegally.
Right, you're illegally. So it happens all the time in all nationalities. Mm-hmm. So they just put the Hispanics on there because last time I had you on there, we talked about the voter's ID and everybody should get an ID. And this is where it comes in on the voter discrimination, because most Hispanics does not have ID. And normally, if you're a legal citizen, any form of business in America that you have to conduct, you have to have some form of identification on you. So all these laws now are, in my opinion, I'm watching how things play itself out. I don't have all these factual evidence yet, people, but I'm watching how things play itself out. So my opinion is, it's as if they're using these rights to assist in letting Hispanics, and I say that Hispanics, choose the right to vote, because I don't see a bunch of Asian people, Asian immigrants or Hungarian or, you know, Kosovo immigrants rallying and screaming they right to vote. I'm seeing more Hispanics, so I feel comfortable saying Hispanics are using this as a tool to, I guess, get their way in the system. But now, hear me not being a xenophobe, Charles. Help me out here. Now, I'm going to go to my man, Pat Buchanan. I'm going to take Pat Buchanan aside for a second. Now, Pat Buchanan is like, nigga, we won the war. We won the Spanish-American War. We won that. Now, are we going to allow us to lose that territory through the form of an election and have the Southwest end up being like Egypt when you give a democracy a chance to flourish? You feel I'm coming from now? Will we lose California,
right,
New Mexico, and Texas legally through elections? Do you come from, you know what I'm saying? Because if those are the borders, now I'm not being a xenophobe, I'm just throwing things out here, people, just for the sake of conversation. Now, if those are the borders, and they're coming over illegal in the drones, and they're getting the right to vote, then they have the right to elect their people. They have the right to put their office in. Then they have the right to open the border. I mean, then you get overran. Then we're getting overran. Legally, almost as if the same situation happened in Egypt when you let the... Now, I'm not against the Muslim Brotherhood, and I'm not against the whole situation. Well, when you let certain elements into elections, now I'm not equating Mexicans or Latinas with the Muslim Brotherhood, but the point I'm saying is, if just 100-something years ago, 20 years, you know, the Spanish-American War was won, and we gathered those countries, those territories.
Mm-hmm.
Now those territories easily gained right back with the invasion of all these immigrants. Now, could all of this be, another part of the master plan from the Mexican part of the standpoint of the government by filling those areas with immigrants, legally citizens, and you can take back your country that way?
Well, see, the interesting thing about your point, and obviously, I mean, everyone is not going to agree on everything, even from the same party. But, you know, what I don't like when I talk about logic is people will dismiss someone as crazy because they don't agree with someone's point. But the interesting thing about what you said is it shows how complex things are. And I say that because you hear, if you listen to it, you hear people arguing, let's just say, I'm not a racist. I just think that people shouldn't be here illegally. And, you know, you see people on TV and they say, I'm against illegal immigrants. And the Mexicans that are here illegal are legal. And people who are proponents of that of reform or the DREAM Act will say, well, see, you're just a racist. And then they'll say, and you'll hear them say, well, you're just saying that the Southwest used to be Mexico anyway, so you're really taking their territory. You're taking their land anyway. They just went back. Well, see, that's someone who just doesn't understand the reality of the way nations are built. If you fight a war, I mean, we weren't there, so you can pick a side. You can say we were wrong to do it, but it happened. If you fight a war and you win a war, and at the end of that war, it's not even like we took slaves or anything. We offered them money for land. It is no longer their land. You know, but that's not the way people look at it. They just want to look at what it's more like what feels good and what makes sense. And you mentioned Egypt. Egypt's a funny thing to me. I'm not on either side from them, because I honestly can't say I know enough about it. But I just do think it's interesting that Bush got knocked for one of his many things that people disagree with, but his bringing democracy to the world, saying, well, we like democracy, but who are you imposing on anyone else? But then Egypt decides they want it. They get their first democratically elected president. He's in there, what, 7-8 months? We don't like what you're doing, and we want to oust him. So then they go in, and they force the military to remove him. But what are they going to replace it with? Which, as we'll see, just watching in the upcoming weeks, they don't know. There's chaos. There's people getting shot every day. So not only do they oust them, but then all these countries have a law that if they're giving funds to a country and the democratically elected president is removed in a coup, you cut off the funding. The Obama administration is saying, well, we need to see if it was a coup or not. He was elected.
Cutting off because
he won the election.
I'm listening to it because, like, that was one of the most turning points in my life. When I was a little boy, real talk people, I sat back. This is Jimmy Carter was president. Now I sat back and I was watching King Kong on TV. Now, I was too little to go see it in the movie theater, but it just came on TV, ABC, movie of the week type of stuff, right? And I was mad because it's like breaking news. And it went for the Mideast Peace Conference. And watch that. And Black and Bacon just signed the Mideast Peace Conference. Whoa. And my father, man, this is real deep, you know. I'm mad because King Kong went off. It's real turning my whole life. Like, man, what have you? And then a couple weeks later, he got shot. Like, bam, he got killed.
Sadat got shot. Uh-huh.
And so that turned my whole world like, what the? This man was on TV a minute ago. Just, you know, he interrupted my King Kong program. So I went to the library, real true story, went to the library. And I read up on the whole story, like, what is going on over here? Like, what? And so that was my turning point in my whole life on my foreign affairs issues. Because I'm like, here this man just signed a peace. He wanted peace. How can a man on a parade get shot by his own people? But anyway, here we are back in Egypt, same time, same place now. Whoever gets in, Egypt is the only big country over there that roll with Israel. So whoever gets in. I mean, there's a lot of thumping, a lot of chest thumping going on, you know, a lot of battles over there in Syria. Damascus being thrown around and stuff, you know, get the Palestinian. I mean, a lot of things, the day we stop, people don't want to talk about this, but the day we stop giving money to that nation over there in Egypt is a day they're going to launch 2 or 3 missiles over to Israel. That's what happens. People are going to look at the blackmail, but we're propping their government up so they won't even roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they want to stay out of it, we'll back you, stay out of it. We know you're the army. You decide this peace treaty. Yeah, don't come get you. We're going to back your army so y'all won't get rolled on for being no time nation. So once they stop that, I mean, hey, the generals are going to take their little money, the little stuff they got, and just go roll on towns and Israel right up the corner. You know, people are looking at that. I mean, then you had Jordan. I mean, then what's happening in Jordan? I mean, I see so much. I didn't want to go to deep a political spectrum, but I was just looking at Israel. I mean, I was looking at Egypt and the situation with the Southwest territories as almost one of the same. But you mentioned the DREAM Act. This is my beef with the DREAM Act, because reparation was never fulfilled, period.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way I'm going to ever be with giving part of reparation that was put together for the assist me to somebody else because it makes you no.
But their argument's going to be you want reparations, you want payment for. And what we're giving them isn't payment. We're just giving them a pathway to citizenship and to allow them to go to school. What's your argument to that?
Pathway to citizenship is a pathway to equality. Because, mm-hmm. let's go, education is a form of equality. Business loans and grants are a form of economic equality. There's no way an Arab should come to your neighborhood and get a seven-year business plan and start some make an economic equality and this 40-acre mules guy can get the same care. Or let's go here. Eradicate debt. One time. Blacks spend their money right back in your system all day. Eradicate the loans and make them debt-free. That'll free them because only bonds people really got on them right now is the bonds of debt. So eradicate them off their debts real fast. They'll spend that shit real point. But the point I'm coming at, that I can go to state-funded free school for damn near next to nothing. And we always talk about let's get African immigrants. We need more highly skilled Americans. We're going to get highly skilled immigrants right now because we're about to get all our schools away. We're not even training the workforce we got here. We're about to get all the stuff away right there. I mean, what I'm saying is it's a pathway to the immigrants becoming equal. And the African American, now, we got to buy our goods and services from other people because they got better deals because they're immigrants and they come into town. But yet we can never get on an equal footing. Not give me money. See, reparations never about giving money. It's like give you land to produce, to make a living and earn a living. Mm-hmm. Not like here's some money, go do something with it. No, because check it out. That'd be too easy. Giving niggas money would be too easy. You know, Bush did it. What did they do? We put it right back in the economy. You know? I mean, that's too easy. You know, repairing the damage of slavery that happened to people, citizens that are descendants of slaves. That damage comes from a whole range of things. I mean, let's look at this. Our grandfathers probably had to go, couldn't laugh in public. They had to stick their head in a bucket and laugh in a bucket. The dehumanizing of our race. You know, I'm not going to just put it down. They were so dehumanization of things. I mean, we couldn't even be as a human. This is about 40 years ago. It's 40 years ago.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. It's my parents' generation. They having problems getting over the new the world that we're living in because they can't understand that things might have changed, but they still got war wounds up, not being able to look at a man in the face. You know, being accused of being black. Yes, I can say the world has changed, but you have people that are damaged because of the war wounds and scars. And now you got a generation of blacks that cannot get advanced and move on because we got to make way for immigrants to get advanced and move on. So where do that leave us, Mr. Love?
Well, you know, every complex problem has to be looked at from more than one side. And, I mean, and unfortunately, with the power we give the government, once the steam gets behind some movement, it's pretty hard to stop it or reverse it. So we have to, I mean, if you're against the Dream Act, if you're against, you know, changes in the voting rights or anything you're against, I mean, it's your right to protest it and try to, you know, get that repealed or changed. But we have to be fighting another fight at the same time. CSA, you have to be prepared. You know, it's like anything else. You're preparing yourself for all the possibilities. So we want to stop the Dream Act, let's say, if that's something you want to do, or whatever you want to do that you think is going to help life specifically. But at the same time, you have to act at, what if all this passes? What do we do then? Because, I mean, you can't quit, right? You can't say, well, we put all our efforts behind stopping the Dream Act, and it passed. We put all our effort behind, you know, not changing, making changes to the Voters' Rights Act, or making the change be adding black, and it didn't happen, so what do we do? So as many things out there that are limiting, there's a lot of opportunities out there, so we have to work together, those of us who are successful or who care or who can get people to listen and say, you know, what is the difference between outside of race and the Head Start? What is the difference between us and the other races who at different points had different challenges or were limited in different ways and seemed to find a way to be successful? And that difference seems to be the way they stuck together and helped each other, right?
Well, let's look at our generation of African Americans. And let's look at I'm going from my parents' generation.
Oh, okay.
See, I'm not gonna go to the 1800s. I'm not gonna go to the cotton picking days. I'm gonna just go to the days. I'm gonna keep it relevant. I'm gonna keep it where you can see.
Right, let's go 50s or 60s, somewhere around there.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going 1950 to 1965. That little branch period right there, that generation, the baby boomer society. Now, the baby boomer society, we went through it. I mean, their parents was just our parents, grandparents, and great grandparents was picking cotton. So that's how far we can go.
And their parents, when they were children, their parents were in the Great Depression.
Right. So our grandparents were Great Depression.
Right.
Our great grandparents were sharecroppers. Our great great grandparents were slavery. So I'm saying you can't. Mm-hmm. I can go. It's not like it was. You know, my grandma's 90 years old. You know, she's 90. So I can go off my great grandmama's cotton picker, slavery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how far I can go to me. And there's other people that can go farther than me, that people that still listen.
Right.
So slavery ain't that far as we want to look at. As really, if you want to generational, it's not that far. You know?
Right.
So point I'm saying is this. We're looking at not how we can say as a people that we're not offered the opportunity for success. I was arguing with somebody the other day, and like, we can say there's racism back in the 1900s, in the turn of the century, but there's some blacks doing well up north, and there's some blacks that was afforded the fact to have white women and knock white men out. Let's look at Jack Johnson. Let's look at Jack Johnson for a second, heavyweight champion. Knocking white men out, dating white women, known to the world, not really too much done with it, you know. Everyone knew they might have got him on some, you know, charges, but he wasn't lynched, he wasn't hung, he wasn't, you know, I mean, like I said. Now, I'm saying that to say this, that here we are in 2013. Now, the African-American is now no better off than he was in 1950. Matter of fact,
you have to ask yourself what? See, my problem, and we may disagree here, is that there's a lot of factors to that. I'm sorry?
In 1950, we was better off. In 1950, in Eisenhower administration, than we are now, is the point I'm trying to make. In 1950, at least, we had our own economy.
Mm-hmm.
Our own businesses, our own institutions in the 50s.
So what changed?
What changed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, jobs changed because back to our generation now, look at our generation, I'm trying to proceed up to this. Our generation, our parents were the first parents to get the benefits of the so-called Civil Rights Act of the 60, the 65, no spot. They were the ones.
So it sounds like you're saying as great as the Civil Rights Act is, it only worked for one generation.
Well, in our generation, our generation right now, we're watching it be eroded day by day, and nobody in our generation is saying anything day by day. Of course, I'm telling you right now. Of course, we're the next generation, and what are we doing about it? Do you understand where I'm coming from? Of course, I'm saying that. Of course, look at all the black people that got them houses moved into the middle class. Now their children can't even keep their houses because the opportunities are not there for their children.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And there now we're going to bring in another class of individuals. Now, I'm not picking on essays. I'm going Asians because they're more smart. I'm going over there to, that Kosovo, Croatia, because they make better cars. I mean, the highly skilled immigrants are coming in now instead of providing opportunity not only for African Americans but for Americans. Period.
Okay, but let me make a point and get your opinion on this though.
Go ahead.
You made a really good point, and I agree with it. That overall, blacks were better off in the 50s than they are now, right?
Right.
I mean, the people who are doing the best are doing far better now than the blacks who were doing the best in the 50s. But as a whole, we're probably better than. I would argue and get a lot of flack that I see two things that are big change in that beyond the obvious, because, you know, obviously I'm not going to argue with the fact that there's still racism and some of the civil rights thing. One is, one difference I see from the 50s, and see, I guess my perception is a little bit different, not necessarily from yours, but from a lot of other people in our generation, in that my parents were older. So I'm a young guy. You talked about your grandmother. My dad would be 93 now. Mm. I'm not 45 yet.
Okay, wow.
So, right, I have a 73-year-old sister.
Oh, man.
So I kind of grew up being young in and around older people with an older mentality. So I saw some of that as a young person. So I think that the difference is, if you go back to
your generation then, right? See, I mean, you can go back. You know, what I'm saying
my father was born in 1920. My father was born before the Depression. So,
right.
Yeah. I'm two generations from the 1800s.
That's what I'm saying. We're not that far removed. You know, we're not that
right.
far removed.
But what I say is, in the 50s, if you look at it in the 50s, we were poor. We were worse off. There was you can cry that there's still racism and discrimination all you want, but you'd be lying to yourself if you're saying it's worse now than it was in the 50s. It was bad. It was physical. It was out in the open, and you couldn't take the guy to court when you did it. But the difference is, you know, the family structure. The difference is we were married at an 85% clip, right? The difference is, you know, we had control. Like you said, we had a home, but we also had control of what happened in our community. Right? The difference is, you know, that in a way, all that negativity brought the community together. So the family was, the structure was stronger and the community was stronger. And that started to tear away, which takes us to, as great as the Civil Rights Act was, the other thing LBJ did that wasn't as great, that sounded great at the time, was his Great Society. Right? So allowing everybody to get them, you know, giving you a leg up, you know, but trying to accelerate that through the funds and through this, which is why, and I think it hurt everyone. It just happened to hurt us blacks more because we were already at a deficit. So, you know, everybody was married more than they are now because of the things that the government will do for single women and making it easier for it. I mean, people didn't think about, guys got a woman pregnant in the 60s. He didn't think about, you know, leaving. Or the girl didn't think about being proud of being pregnant at 13 and single, right? But now, you know, it's just a given that if that happens, these fail safes are there. Now, I'm not saying that it's evil, and I'm not saying I'm some evil Republican who doesn't care about people. I just think I need everybody to be logical and understand that good intentions also have consequences. You can't really believe that when LBJ, because I don't think he's a bad guy, when he signed when he implemented his Great Society, he wasn't saying, let me see if I can break up the family. That was not his goal. And any Republican who says that is lying to you and trying to make him look bad. It was not his goal. It just had an unintended consequence. You know,
right.
And once the government grew so large and once the government started to control things, and see, no, like you say, like we always talk about how we talk about poor people, we talk about people on welfare, you know, like the non-people in so many bad ways. But the other thing is we leave out the fact that nobody wants to be on welfare. There's a really small percentage of people, most people that may say, "Oh, I get free money, why should I work?" But nothing's really free, you know. There's no such thing as a free lunch. So when you're beholden to the government, the government and the people who get contracts with the government, like, they start to make so much money and the government has so much control, one, they don't want to let you go, and they make you jump through so many hoops to get the money. So now, you know, the government's may, you know, lock people up with their laws, but now that third-party people can make so much money on the prison system, they got a big lobby to do everything they can to keep as many people to keep their prisons full, because that's how they get paid. Right? So everything has a consequence. And I think that's one thing that accelerated the erosion in the black community, and that, you know, and it's not like, and nobody's really specifically culpable. It's not like women say, well, now that LBJ passed this, all men get out the house, we don't need you anymore. It just became easier to do it without men. It became easier for the man to walk away. It became easier for all these other things to happen. Because as we talk about, you know, we always talk about the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King, but when we look at that and we look at the hoses and the dogs and the lynching and all that stuff, what we always saw that we don't talk about, we talk about how bad the racist whites were and how strong MLK and the people with him were, but we don't talk about all the family. We don't talk about how everybody was married. We don't talk about how, you know, the community stuck together as a whole. Can you really say the black community sticks together as a whole now?
Right. You can't say that. We're watching every day about 7-year-olds getting shot, you know, mamas got their babies out at midnight. I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm just saying. It's a.
Right. I mean, we got to be real on both sides. If we really, that's my first thing. If we really want to help the community, we need some honesty. Like, I'm watching TV right now and CNN's talking about the Trayvon Martin case. So I'm on Twitter, and you can follow me at thinkordie.org. So
thinkordie.org, people are out there again. Thinkordie.org, not a problem. Everybody know that.
Yes.
Okay, go
so
ahead.
People are like tweeting stuff, and my response is, I'm not even following the trial, but I just like to get under the skin of both sides. Some right-wing person might say, we found out Trayvon had marijuana in his system, ha-ha, or something, and I'll say, doesn't matter.
Hey, hold on. How many that was in the system?
A nanogram, 1 billion.
One billion, what, 1.3 nanograms of an ounce. Of a gram.
Right.
And that's got to be,
right.
If you don't know what nanograms is, to get 1 gram from a nanogram, you need how many grams, Ebony?
1 billion
nanograms.
1 billion.
To get 1 gram.
Uh-huh.
You know,
right.
To have that much weed in your system, you have to walk past somebody just blew smoke in your face. You know
right.
what I mean?
And hold your breath so it didn't get in your breath, right. So my thing was, so I replied to that and I said, that doesn't matter. So it's not like, I don't want people to think I'm just cheering for them or anything on either case. But I was going above the case. So my response would be, or somebody else would say, they testified that Trayvon wasn't on top like Zimmerman said. Ha-ha, he lied. And then I was like, does that matter? And they're like, what do you mean, does it matter? I'm not, because that pussy's innocent. I prove that Zimmerman's guilty. And I say, I'm not arguing Trayvon's innocence. I'm arguing why he's the most important innocent man in the country. I'm like,
what?
So you'll get a kick out of this one. So Roland Martin tweeted something. And if you ever see Roland on there, he tweets like 100,000 times a day. So he's tweeting stuff that they, you know, blow by blow of the trial. And I said something like, it doesn't matter. And so I was tweeting the crimes that were, the shootings that were happening in Chicago every day. So it was the day that the two kids get shot in the park. And I tweeted this and I put the link to the news. And then I think the day before I had tweeted him about the newspaper salesman, 23LU newspaper salesman that got shot. So I tweeted that to him, and he replied and called me an idiot. He said, you're an idiot. I've been on the shootings in Chicago for years. I'm like, right. But what I'm saying is what happened to Trayvon is bad, regardless of whether he goes to jail for murder or not. An unarmed, you know, 17-year-old kid got shot. All I'm saying is you're making his life more important than everybody else's because at least 10 people are dying every day, and you're not talking about it. All you're talking about is this. And, like, after 3 days of me tweeting about the college student that got shot in D.C. and the two students in Chicago, he retweeted one of them and the link to start. And I'm like, thank you, Mr. Martin. I'm just saying we're dying in the streets every day, and you're telling me about Trayvon. Trayvon died in February last year. Not saying it's unimportant. Not saying I don't care. Not saying Zimmerman shouldn't go to jail. I'm just saying it's not more important than the, I don't know, what would you say, 500 innocent people that didn't get killed since him? Until we think all of them matter, then we have a problem. We can't only count the people that are shot by the non-black guy.
See, the Trayvon Martin case to me is a very emotional case. I get emotion at people who get emotional about the case, you know, and it hurts me that they get. I'm getting to an argument, and people are so passionate about it. The first, full disclosure, everybody, I ain't watched the case until Friday, until today. It was the first time I watched it. And I watched the forensic analysis from the doctor, and to me, did an excellent job. And from after the doctor get off the stage, I see now that the tides has turned and the tables have turned. All I want is just the facts. I don't want to see if a man got a nanometer of marijuana in his system or the fact that Zimmerman walk his dog to work every day. All I want, I don't even care what his wife said, his girlfriend said on the phone. Throw her testimony out. Give me
right.
the facts. Give me the facts. Give me the 911 call. Give me the call between him and the police officer where I've been. give me what the forensic man says, how the blow and the bullet entered his body, how long he was alive, how long he agonized. Give me all of that, you know. Just give me
but
that. Because point on, those are the facts. You know,
but here's the thing.
Right there, you know, because it's a timeline. The timeline is right there.
But here's the thing. How many people were physically there at the time? Two of them, and maybe somebody if they looked out the window, right?
Right.
Those are the people know for a fact. I was watching headline. I haven't watched any of the trials, but I was watching headline news, let's say last Thursday, and they had, I don't know, six, seven guests. Like right now, it's on Anderson Cooper, he has five guests. So they had like five or six guests, but they were in studio. These people aren't. And the man, I don't know who hosts it because I don't watch it that often, they had a reenact, so they had a fake jury. They put some people in a jury box, and then the five attorneys he had on there, they had virtual houses along the street that looked like the gated community, and then they reenacted what they think might have happened. Are you kidding me? That's completely insane.
That's the same, man. Listen, obviously, I guess some great minds think alike, but I just happened to, I went to VON, that's WVON.com. I went to the link and tried that, went on it, and I just sat there and watched it. I mean, the whole case, and it was very therapeutic, you know. I spent the whole day, like today, I had nothing to do, and it's very therapeutic, and I, you know, got my meditation off listening to it. But if you hear the case from this point on, I told my people who's angry with me for stating the facts are the facts. If you watch the case now, the case begins when the defense has to put on their case. Now, Zimmerman has to show why he didn't do it. And from this point on, now the game is on. Because, you know, for my, and I hate to give you all the Zimmerman information, I don't want to be all Zimmerman all the time, but two police officers contradicted themselves. The officer that played his father the tape said, he said, no, that's not my son, mumbled in his breath. And the lady who also testified for the defense said, he heard the same thing too, but heard him saying, that is my son on the tape. Yeah, one person said he said some words, and the other cop who was right in front of him saying he said no. You got contradictions on there. It's the case is unraveling. But what has happened is, and I'm angry that the media and the invisible government, or how you say it, love, the powers that be are pushing the racial buttons and the emotional hot spots to drum up this fake hate that's out there. It's
right.
Fake.
I mean, there's enough real hate out there. We don't need fake hate.
If you look at the facts, you know, the facts. This is one truth about the case. Zimmerman shot Trayvon in the discussion.
Yep.
Now, that's factual. These are the facts. Zimmerman called the police officer, said there's somebody in there. The police said don't follow him. That's fact. Fact that he called again and said the man is over there. Police leave the man alone. That's fact. Fact he hit somebody on top of somebody and shots going fire screaming help, help, help. That's fact. The fact that the gun was not pointed directly at his body and the gun was behind his back and all that, that's fact. The fact that the man that 10 seconds later and died, he didn't call 911 for help, that's fact. Now, the point I'm saying, with all that fact, this at me, this, I'm not being emotional. I'm going on with the facts. I'm not even going on with the people testifying. I ain't want to go off that. I'm going on what the facts are. The facts are here. There's no wounds or no bloody wounds. He swung my man and hit the man. His right hand is no wounds on his right hand. I mean, I'm not rooting or Putin. But the point I'm saying, the facts are one dead man, one man shot somebody. In the discussion, that the facts fall where they lay. You know, I don't think the way they built the case up so far that they're going to be, I'm just sure, are going to be rising the street. What's going to happen? Because everybody was so emotional and distraught because of Precious went up there and started testifying and she didn't do a good job, and everybody got mad at Precious. And everybody thought it's over. Now the doctor came out, did a great job. Everybody said, oh, my God, they're going to win now. You know, it's too much of an emotional roller coaster, and nobody's paying attention to the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that got knocked down because everybody's looking at this racial injustice, thinking it's Emmett Till hanging.
And again, like I said, it's you said people get angry at you. I know more would get angry at me because my thing is I didn't watch the second of the trial and don't plan on it. And it's not because of any, you know, lack of empathy for Martin. And
I got a show to do, that's all.
It's just there's lots of people getting killed every day, and we can't only care when our people are killed by someone that doesn't look like us. You can't say I can't be a white man and you black. I shoot one black guy, you kill 10, and I'm on CNN every day, and you get to walk off scot free. All of the lives should matter. I mean, we're running this trial, and every day you read the newspaper. I mean, how many people got shot? 72 people in Chicago Wednesday, 11 dead since Wednesday?
72 got shot, right.
Where's the CNN outcry for that?
Where's the breaking news flash? That was a fucking mess. 72 people shot in a four-day weekend. That's like a...
In 11 days.
I mean, just...
So I'm not a bad person for saying, I'm not saying that anything bad about Trayvon and his family. I'm saying he can't matter more than 11 people in 4 days. We can't allow that. We can't allow that. We can't allow a man who was killed wrongfully. I'm going to give you wrongfully by Zimmerman. February of last year, more important than everybody who's gotten killed since then. I mean, last year we had 500 and something murders. How can that one be more important?
Well, check this out. Last week
we had 11.
Blacks are using this as a... See, this is my opinion, everybody. Now, love, roll with me for a second. And see if you can help me. I think blacks are using this, and they say blacks like I'm racist, everybody. I think my homies are using this as a barometer to see what the justice system looking like under Barack Obama. Now, that's how I know he's going to be found guilty. So this will be a victory that Obama gave the black community without even at the passing legislation to make them feel happy. Because if this happened, then he would be dissatisfied and go down as a bad president. But if Trayvon Martin is found justice because the Zimmerman was found guilty, then blacks will feel that they won one, and they will overlook all Obama faults and mishaps. Trust me, love. What do you think about that?
I think that may be true, but it's sad. I mean, if you get unemployment in the black community at the level that you have it, you have blacks killing blacks at the rate that you have it, and you're going to hinge whether the country is getting better or not on whether Zimmerman gets found guilty so he can say that Obama had something to do with it. It's sad and it's crazy, but you're probably right. I'm not saying you're wrong, but it doesn't make sense. When does the selfishness kick in when we care so much about ourselves? Sometimes we need, like I say, when I say we're selfish by nature, I didn't necessarily mean a bad thing, but I want us to be selfish to the point that, you know, forget about what's going on TV or who's hanging, following the Kardashians or who won the Super Bowl this year. I want to get my kids educated, or I need to get a better job. What do I have to do? You know, they say that I don't have the skills to get in the jobs, that the jobs out there now, they kind of turn around, but I don't have any of those skills, so the economy's going to turn around for me. Okay, what do I need to do to change that for me? Where's that selfishness?
Right.
Why is the selfishness got to be, I'm black and Trayvon got shot? Why don't you, try to improve yourself and help you and turn to your left and help that person improve himself?
See, here I go, Mr. Love, in my little 6 minutes I got. This is my non-xenophobe way comes out. I'd rather America skill Americans and get opportunities to Americans instead of immigrants. Not me being non-immigrants.
But we gotta want the improvement.
I mean,
right?
Like this. I mean, yeah, in 5 minutes I gotta say, I can't go like the right to work here. The right to work. I mean, I can bring factories. Man, listen, there's people in place that's putting you down, and we got people in place that's holding us back because it's ways of having legislation passed, not only in D.C., but to the state level to better benefit African-Americans. It's all about putting your resources together and putting all your fucking eggs in one basket and making a fucking omelet. It's real talk, because right now, like you just said, the civil rights laws only benefit a generation. Now, here we are, love. It's our generation. What are we going to do about it? That's why I'm having, right? That's why the Martin Luther King Republic is in existence, so it won't erode under our watch. And that's why we're here. You know, now,
well,
I got 4 minutes.
They're going to get them all to read my book so they could not have one egg in the basket and split that up.
I'm leading to that right now. Now, Mr. Love, why don't you tell our listeners in the 4 minutes I got, where can they find your book, where can they follow you on Twitter, and I'd like to have you back on Wednesday where we can deal with more on your book and probably get my little panel together and go from right there. Go on ahead, my 4 minutes I got, brother man.
I got you. The book, Logic, The Truth About Blacks and the Republican Party, and why they need to work together to improve the party, the black community, and the country. The Republicans are not going to succeed without blacks, with the emergence of Hispanic population. This is the ideal time because they're desperate and they need people for blacks to kind of open their mind and say, okay, maybe I'll consider them. But as desperate as they are, I would venture to say that blacks need Republicans as much. We can't continue to be a one-dimensional party. I'm going to read a quote in the book I got, one that I like, from Carter G. Woodson. And he says, it is unfortunate, too, that such a large number of Negroes do not know any better than to stake their whole fortune on politics. History does not show that any race, especially a minority group, has ever solved an important problem by relying altogether on one thing, certainly not by parking its political strength on one side of the fence because of empty promises. That's Dr. Carter G. Woodson from 1933. It's 2013. It's time for us not to put all our eggs in one basket.
That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at, Mr. Love, Charles Love. And you can find you on what? We at on Twitter now. Your Twitter account is what now?
It's thinkordie.org. My website is thinkordie.org. I'm on Twitter at thinkordie.org. The book is Logic, The Truth About Blacks and the Republican Party. You can find it at Amazon. It's available on Kindle if you want to read it electronically. I think everybody needs to get it. It demystifies the misconceptions about blacks. It does not.
Well,
I know
I'm going to promote it all. I'm going to promote it all up until the 2014 fucking election. And
really quick, it's not an anti-Democrat book. It's not a black people are dumb and all that book. It's a we need options. We need to not have our eggs in one basket. We need options and opportunities, and we can't just keep our minds closed to Republicans. Because well, my last thing I want people to just ponder and just put that out there in the air, because I'm going to give you, I already know many of them think Republicans are racist, and you can't really break that. I've had several black people tell me, I agree with some of the policies. I just can't fix myself to vote for them because they're racist. So it'll blow your mind, but I'm going to say, so what? If a man is racist,
and that's why we're going to have you win
it
over and more with it. And I can see why you know, throwing that little Hispanics coming to the party, too. I ain't going to – listen, I'm not anti-Hispanic. That ain't the whole little deal. I'm just won't.
No, I'm saying Hispanics are going to take all the juice we got in the Democrat Party. Then we're going to be left with no party.
Party at all. That's what I'm saying. Is then what they always said, they don't like you. Excuse me. Ain't niggers. The Democrats don't like you no more niggers. They got the essay. They got the sand niggers now. They don't need the cotton picking niggers. They got the sand niggers now. And that's what they're going to deal with. So I'll see you all tomorrow on Talk to Me Tuesday. I got my man Charles Love. Justin Stamps coming on. And we're going to talk about the little program. So listen, Charles Love at thinkordie.org, you say?
Yep, thinkordie.org.
Thinkordie.org. I'll see you Wednesday, man, and I'm going to give you the information because I want that book. I want that book, and we're going to take you on tour so everybody can know that this, listen, you might have the next revolutionary manifesto out there. It might be hot. Say, hey, and I like your dialogue. I might have you up almost once, twice a month. You know, sometimes we got to educate
call
people.
Call me back.
Man,
I'm here.
I got you. Thank you for being on. All right, everybody. I guess it's Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. I'm be out of time. So like I said, everything. Good night, everybody, and may your God be with you. I guess I can go out with some type of music in 24 seconds. I'm just gonna get something. I don't know. 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. Good night, and may your God be with you.